I think it's the same team, same attitude. We're just going out there every day focused on kind of our brand of baseball and what we do really well and what series we're playing in. I think the games over the weekend against the Red Sox were a good example of just kind of our brand of baseball, all three facets, and doing it really well. And so that was a lot of fun to come out of the break that way. You know, we dropped that game on Sunday, but I thought it was just really good baseball overall.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
Welcome in, welcome back. I'm Steve Rosenblum, your host of Saturday Suckage. In this final hour, we'll talk Cubs and Brewers. We'll talk about Jed Hoyer's failure with pitching. Eno Saris wrote something that seems to indict Jed, and there's more to it than that. And I'll correct a suckage mistake. I wandered down the movie, the greatest movie, one of the greatest movies ever, with the coolest guy in the world. And then I made a mistake. I suck, and I was called out by a texter. We'll get to that. And it turns out there is a strain of weed that sort of sounds like Saturday Suckage that my otter found. We'll get to that too. But first, we're going to talk Cubs and Brewers. Well, first, the Cubs have to vote whether they want to go up to Milwaukee to even face the Brewers after they got windburned by Milwaukee. So to find out about that, we're going to go to the Circa Resort and Casino hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Joining me from 1250 The Fan in Milwaukee is Sparky Pfeiffer. Sparky, thanks for taking time today. I appreciate it.
You betcha. Anytime.
So the Brewers are doing what the Brewers always do. What Ozzie Guillen called the Twins, when he called them the Twins, the Piranhas, like 20 years ago. This is what they do. It seems to us this is what they do. They continue to outperform expectations. Are they outperforming expectations?
I don't know if they're outperforming expectations necessarily. I mean, I think up here in Milwaukee, I think people had around 85 wins. They're 20 over right now. So I guess by a few games, they're overperforming. You know, the one thing about this team is I think if you look at the lineup and, you know, you don't know any better, you look at this and don't know who half these guys are, and then you look at the power numbers, they got like two, maybe three guys in a lineup on a day-to-day basis actually have double-figure home runs. They're among the worst when it comes to, you know, barrel percentage and stuff like that. And you just try to figure out how they're winning. Well, they're winning because they have great starting pitching. The bullpen has been really good on the back end as well. You know, this phenom, Jacob Mizorowski, is in the starting rotation. Now, how long he'll be in the starting rotation is another question, because Nasty Nestor, who they got from the Yankees in a Devin Williams trade, Nestor Cortez, he just made another rehab start. It looks like he's ready to go, coming off a 9-strikeout performance. So they have decisions to make here, probably by the time that Cubs series starts, as far as what they're going to do with this starting rotation going forward. Mizorowski is lined up, I believe, to start on Monday. So we'll see how this plays out.
That's why the Cubs are going to vote is whether they want to go up there at all. What I don't know how you take that guy out of the rotation or how you ever think about it, unless it's a matter of innings and you're worried about is how he's going to hold up and you're worried about him long term, or are you even worried about it and go, well, you know what, this would be a hell of a game one starter if we get to that point, and we'd want to have him saved up to that point. So I don't know. How would the rotation go? How would their playoff rotation go, Sparky?
I think, well, first of all, I did talk about Mizorowski quickly. It is an innings thing. The most innings he's ever thrown was last year at AAA. It's 97 innings. And they think you can get to about 140 or so, and then that's it, and he's done for the season. So with Nestor coming back, it may be a situation where maybe he goes back to the bullpen and pitches an inning here, two innings there. And then maybe you stretch him back out for the playoff run to get into a playoff series. As it sits right now, I think the playoff rotation would be Peralta, Woodruff, and Mizorowski. Those would be your front three in the rotation, and see what happens. And I find it hard to believe there are many other top threes around baseball that are going to be better than that.
The Cubs would love to have that top three. They got a problem with the rotation. They got a problem with the bullpen. The Brewers seem to be a team that is built to win in the regular season, but not necessarily in the playoffs. Is that an accurate representation?
that seemingly has been how it's been lately. I mean, they go to the playoffs all the time. I mean, this is a regular occurrence for the Brewers. I mean, we're really spoiled here in Wisconsin. I mean, Bucks are in the playoffs every year. We have Giannis. Packers are in the playoffs every year from Favre to Rodgers and now to Jordan Love. And now this Brewers team has been in the playoffs seemingly every year for the last 10 years almost. I think they missed a couple of times. That's it. What happens in the playoffs, technically, it usually is the offense. And that is one of the reasons why I'm a big fan of going out and getting Eugenio Suarez. However, there's not a lot of people that believe the Brewers will go all in and trade a bunch of prospects to get Suarez. But if they were to do that and add 36 home runs to the middle of that lineup with Churio and Yelich and Contreras, all of a sudden that becomes a way far more formidable lineup. Otherwise, you know, they lost a 1-0 game to break their winning streak the other day to the Mariners. Cal Raleigh hit a home run in a game for Seattle. Well, for the Brewers to score runs, a lot of the times it takes a couple of hits in order to get that done, 2-3 hits. They don't have a lot of guys that can, you know, change the course of a game with one swing. And I think if there's a weakness to this team right now, it's the lack of power.
They run the bases like crazy, which is something that Craig Counsell has brought from Milwaukee to the Cubs. And they play, it seems to me, terrific defense. However they can prevent runs to make up for the runs they can't get in the long ball. This seems to be the way they're doing it this year to the highest degree.
Yeah, their defense is really good. Joey Ortiz, while he can't hit all that well, is a wizard with a glove at shortstop, playing really well. Caleb Durbin, who they got in that deal too, I mentioned earlier, from the Yankees, doesn't have any power necessarily. And he's getting better hitting in the last month or so. He's really come on hitting. But defensively, he's really good at third base. Doesn't have a strong arm, but has great range and gets about anything. So that's really been a nice factor. Bryce Durang at second base won the Platinum Glove last year. So obviously we know he's probably the best defensive second baseman in the game. So that's really good. First base, it all depends. Reese Hoskins isn't horrible. Andrew Vaughn has had his moments. You all know about Andrew Vaughn with the White Sox. But I think you're pretty comfortable with Reese Hoskins at first base. So you feel good there. And then the outfield, yeah, obviously Jackson Chourio can get to anything that's hit to him. Sal Frelick, who should be ready to go by the time we get back to money, he'll be coming off the IL. He's a Gold Glove outfielder as well. So that's another really solid outfielder. Now they just get back Blake Perkins, who should be a Gold Glove caliber outfielder as well. They got a lot of speed and a lot of really good defenders for sure on this team. And Contreras has gotten better defensively since they got him from the Braves a couple of years ago.
I'm talking with Sparky Pfeiffer of 1250 The Fan in Milwaukee. Cubs will play the Brewers. They'll get a chance to, well, they should have a chance to take over, to get back into first place to figure out what these Brewers are doing. It was supposed to change when Craig Counsell came to the big market Cubs, and the small market Brewers just keep on winning. What is the baseball infrastructure there that is so consistently good that you've seen the Brewers withstand the loss of their manager? You've seen them withstand the loss of trades of starters or non-signing of starters or trading of closers, and they just keep making good baseball teams. Why? How?
I think there's probably a couple of different reasons. Number one, that pitching that they came up with down in Arizona and the mystery behind that to a certain degree, I guess, that David Stearns put into place has really helped them kind of identify weaknesses and issues and how to fix different pitchers. I think that helps. Secondly, and maybe more importantly than the first thing I mentioned, is Chris Hook as the pitching coach for the Brewers is unbelievable. We joke up here that he turns water into wine consistently no matter who they give him to pitch with. He figures out a way to make them significantly better. And then what we've seen is after they leave, outside of maybe Adrian Houser for the White Sox, everybody else seemingly falls apart after they leave Milwaukee and aren't the same pitcher anymore outside of when they're here. So I think that's a big deal. They just signed him to a multi-year agreement to keep him away from Chicago. So that was a huge deal. And then from a hitting perspective, I think it's just a general philosophy of building with speed and defense. When David Stearns was here, and now with Matt Arnold as general manager, who came in with David Stearns, you know, Stearns came from Houston, advanced analytics. That's how Houston was built, the Astros. And he brought Matt Arnold with him from Tampa Bay. Same type of deal, but working with a lot less payroll. So Matt Arnold knows how to build with, you know, lesser payroll to get the best out of guys. And that philosophy has been what they've been driven by. International scouting, they've done really well there, too. They've invested a lot of money in different academies all over. You know, outside of the U.S. and netted Jackson Chourio. They've got two kids right now that are at A-ball Jesus Mate and Luis Pena, who some think might be as good, if not better, than Churio before this whole thing is said and done. They're at A-ball together, going crazy. Their farm system is one of the best in baseball right now. So everything going right. The only thing they don't have is a World Series ring in the entirety of the organization's history.
I'm talking with Sparky Pfeiffer, 1250 The Fan in Milwaukee. Brewers, Cubs, they're going to meet next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in Milwaukee. And you mentioned Andrew Vaughn earlier, and White Sox fans grew terribly frustrated with him, and why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you better? Why aren't you living up to that draft status? And he goes to Milwaukee, and what are they asking him? Why is he doing whatever he's doing so well?
When they made that trade, that literally the day it happened, Brewers media gathered around Pat Murphy and asked Pat Murphy about the trade. And Pat Murphy said, I've watched Andrew Vaughn a lot. When Andrew Vaughn has a long swing, he gets himself in trouble. When he has a shorter compact swing, he's really good. And we just have to make sure that he stays in that shorter compact swing and he'll be fine and he'll be what we want. And sure enough, they got him to be in that shorter, more compact area, and he's been really, really good for him. Struggled in the Seattle series, hit a bunch of ground balls, came back yesterday, had a hit yesterday, and looked more like he did prior to that Seattle series. So I think we're going in the right direction with Andrew Vaughn. You know, and they have him for another year of control. Reese Hoskins will be a free agent at the end of this year. So there's a chance Andrew Vaughn might be a starting first baseman for the Brewers next season.
You know, it's interesting. The Andrew Vaughn is a similar, has echoes of the whole Michael Kopech episode, where you're just not doing it for that team, not listening to your team, either not trusting the coaching or the advice you're getting. And it turned out to be the right advice in Michael Kopech's case. He just had to hear it from the Dodgers, and then he won a World Series ring. And Andrew Vaughn is doing much better not hearing it from the White Sox. He may be hearing the same thing. It sounds pretty simple. Your swing's too long. Shorten it. And he believes what he hears in Milwaukee. It's remarkable what a change of pace does, especially when you're going to a winning organization or an organization that has pretty high expectations, it seems the Brewers do.
Well, it's interesting because, like, Vaughn gets here and tells Pat Murphy, hey, man, I know you guys steal a lot. And Pat Murphy's like, I know you're slow. We're not going to ask you to run a whole bunch. Don't worry about it. You're good. Just hit the ball and get on base. Don't worry about it. We know you're slow. But that's Pat Murphy, right? He's direct. He's funny. He's sarcastic. He gets on the younger players. And they all love him, man. They all love playing for Pat Murphy. And, you know, that White Sox thing, I mean, I'm old enough to have gone through 26 years of losing with the Brewers, not making the playoffs, 11 straight years of never getting to 500 or above for the Brewers. I went through all of that. And when you're a bad organization, players lose trust in what they're being told because you're a bad organization for a reason. When you go to a good organization and there's success stories all around you, you're more willing to buy into what's being told to you versus if you're in a losing situation your entire career.
Okay, so the obligatory Packers question, I know you cover the Packers, you have the Bears-Packers question. The Bears are always looking up at them, but the Bears have that precious one-game winning streak. What are the expectations or demands or thoughts of what the Packers, what they should achieve this year?
I think it's division title. I think with the Lions losing both coordinators, I think that's a reasonable goal at this point. And I think that division is pretty wide open. I saw somebody suggest that all four teams could make the playoffs this year. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think you could see all four teams in the division, you know, be at 8-9 wins or better this upcoming season. And I think that speaks to how good this division is going to be. We'll see what happens, obviously, in Chicago with Ben Johnson. I have a lot of respect for Ben Johnson. I think he's really good. Now, nobody really knows how good Caleb Williams is going to be, so we'll find out what happens this year because that's going to be the reason I think, whether you guys go far or not. And then on the Lions side, like we said, two offensive coordinators. The Vikings side, you don't know about McCarthy and how long it will take for him to find his groove and be that quarterback. But the Packers, the continuity is a really big deal, I think, for the Packers of, you know, same coaches, everybody's still in place as you wanted. And even though nobody likes Nathaniel Hackett because he's been a complete bust everywhere outside of Green Bay, they've brought him back to help with the defense. And that's been, I think, something that Matt LaFleur is very excited about. He had Robert Saleh helping last year with the Packers offense. He had, I'm blanking now on the former horrible Bears offensive coordinator that came from the Packers that you guys had. That was
Luke Getsy?
Yes, Luke Getsy. Luke Getsy is on that staff again this year and was helping last year with the defense. So he tends to bring back all of his friends and his buddies to come back and thinks they're all instrumental in helping on both sides of the ball from the side that they don't coach on. So it helps make the coach better, too. So I think that's a positive. And then, you know, the Packers drafted a couple wide receivers this year for the first time in a long time early in the draft. And you hope they make an impact, too.
So the precocious Bears coach, the precocious Bears rookie coach, came in and part of his opening statement, his opening press conference was, "I like beating Matt LaFleur twice a year."
Yep.
How did Matt LaFleur really take that, or what was there grumbling? Was there under the breath muttering? Was there something we should know here in Chicago about the rivalry?
No, I don't think so. He kind of just blew it off. When it was brought up to him, kind of chuckled and laughed and said, "Yeah, he's going to say what he's going to say down there, whatever." You know, kind of just moved on with it. So I don't think he read too much into it. I think Packer fans got a little riled up by it. But I don't think it really ruffled Matt LaFleur's feathers one way or the other. Now we'll find out, though, right? So Packers-Bears play, and if the Packers beat the Bears and he makes reference to the Johnson comment from before the season, then we will both know that it did ruffle his feathers, even though he wasn't letting on to it.
Is he a kind of guy, is Matt LaFleur, you think, would he make his point without having to say anything by just running up the score? Would he pull a trick play on the Bears when they're up 38-10?
If his feathers are ruffled, yes, I think he would.
Oh, see, so yeah. get your popcorn ready. Sparky, get your popcorn ready.
If his feathers are ruffled, yes, I absolutely think that could be kind of what happens here. But again, he's acting like it's not a big deal. So if it's not, then obviously you won't see it. But I think if you cross him and you get him mad, I think you could definitely see that if given the opportunity. But again, we got to wait and see what this is going to look like. A lot of people have been critical of Jordan Love this offseason. People have talked about how bad that wide receiving core was last year, and rightfully so. They're without Christian Watson probably for at least the first month of the season, their number one wide receiver. And last year in the second half, that offense was based around Josh Jacobs and a really conservative Jordan Love. And this year, my hope is that it's going to be Jordan Love based around Josh Jacobs again, but my hope is that Tucker Kraft becomes that number one target, the tight end, and he gets 8 to 10 targets a game. There's a bunch of play action trying to stretch the field, and that's how this offense goes, but we shall see.
Well, the Bears traditionally don't bother covering the tight end for whatever reason. They allow them to have career years, career games. It's a remarkable thing, that part of the Bears tradition that George McCaskey loves so much. But we'll wait and see. And I sure hope Matt LaFleur is ruffled by it. I'm here for the drama. I'm here for the show. I'm here for the fun. So I hope that he gets riled.
Do you remember how great it was with Ditka and Forrest Gregg?
Oh, yeah.
That was the glory years of this rivalry. I missed that a lot. Even though the Packers weren't very good, that was when it was truly a rivalry, when the two coaches wanted to kill each other, the players wanted to kill each other. That's when it was really at its peak.
Yes, they're the fighting. Everybody's fighting. If I were down there, I'd be fighting too, like they do in Slapshot. That's what the whole thing reminded me of. Sparky, I appreciate your time. Thanks for time on Saturday. Thanks for talking Brewers
Absolutely.
And Packers. Take care.
Take care.
All right. Sparky Pfeiffer of 1250 The Fan in Milwaukee, talking Cubs and Brewers, as well as Packers and Bears. And speaking of Cubs and Brewers, Eno Saris wrote something this week. You heard Sparky talking about Brewers pitching, starting in relief and bullpen. Eno Saris wrote something about the Brewers, like how do they do what they do? How did they pass Jed Hoyer's Cubs? One of the ways they did it is with Jed Hoyer's guys. Jed Hoyer gets paid to be right. He was wrong. He has been wrong in the most important element of the game, as it seems to be surfacing now. We'll discuss that next. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll be on the phones a ton. We'll try to be as creative as possible. I think there's some years that it's really obvious, you know, the handful of guys you're going to target, the sellers are obvious. I think this year is going to be a year you kind of have to be a little bit more creative. There's not as many obvious sellers, and there's a bunch of teams that are sort of in the margin. So think that's how I'm looking at it. We have to be creative. We have to challenge ourselves to think about things differently. The good news is we have a really good team. We do have some needs and things we need to work to address, and we'll work really hard at that. But I like what we have on the field as well.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
So let's talk about the Cubs, who are sucking lately. They can't get out of the AL Central basement.
Jed Hoyer just told you they were really good, though.
They are. They have a good team. They're second-best team in the National League, right? I mean, the record tells you that.
That's true. That's correct, yeah.
Third-best team in baseball. The Toronto Blue Jays are the best team in baseball. Have the best record in baseball.
Are they really?
The first time since 1992 that they have held that distinction.
Wow, I didn't realize it'd been that long.
Yeah.
Good for them.
And they won a World Series in 92. And then they did bad things to the White Sox in 93, which was hijacked by Michael Jordan's return, that playoff series. And anyways, we're going to talk about the Brewers. Anyway, Jed Hoyer talking about, yeah, pitching. He needs pitching. Jed Hoyer gets paid to be right, and he's been wrong. And now he's going looking for more pitching. He's been wrong about pitching. So we'll start with this from Eno Saris in The Athletic on why the Brewers are so good. We just talked to Sparky Pfeiffer about the Brewers, and he mentioned some of the names, but this will eventually get around to indicting Jed Hoyer in some ways. The patron saint might as well be second baseman Bryce Terang, who had 18 steals, a mid-300s OBP, and will barely hit more than 10 homers this year. He's a true Brewer. Not only because of what he does at the plate, but also on the base pass, but also because he's an excellent defender. No teammate of his has played 500 innings in the field and put up a negative defensive value, according to StatCast. That's part of why Milwaukee has been so good at preventing runs. Not the whole reason. The staff has a top five ERA and has some newly and usually cheaply acquired pitchers who are outperforming their career numbers. It's remarkable when you take a look. So then Eno Saris in The Athletic took a look, made a chart. There it is. Two of the pitchers on the list. One is Rob Zastrzyzny. Sound familiar?
It's a 2016 World Series member.
Yeah, Rob Zastrzyzny. Another name on the list, Trevor McGill.
Former Cub.
Yeah, both of them are. Mm-hmm. Before Zastrzyzny became a Brewer, his ERA was 4.3. After he got there, it's 2.03 by midweek. McGill, he was a Cub, remember? He was here. The Cubs are the ones, of course, with that pitch lab, the vaunted pitch lab, the secret pitch lab. McGill's ERA before he got to Milwaukee, that means the time he spent with Jed Hoyer's pitch lab and the Cubs, was 6.03.
Not good.
After that, 2.85.
That's good.
Trevor McGill made his major league debut with the Cubs in 2021. He ranks among the top 10 in majors by WAR. A Brewers bullpen does. San Diego has a right-hander named Jason Adam. He's also a former Cub. He was an all-star this year. Former Cub, really, pitcher, and all-star. Cubs looking for pitching. Really, Jed? Huh? The Padres pen also, I know you're a Cub fan, Sean. You'll get to comment on this next. The Padres pen also includes a name, Jeremiah Estrada.
He's very good.
He's a former Cub. He was drafted by the Cubs in the sixth round in 2017. So we assume he spent time in the vaunted Cubs pitch lab, right? That magical thing, that Hogwarts of pitching. So when he pitched for the Cubs, Jed Hoyer's Cubs, he had a WAR in 2 years combined of minus 0.1. Now, San Diego, he has a combined WAR in the last 2 years of 2.5. Really? Oh, and you know who the Cubs had last year in Iowa? Do you know, Sean? Sean, do you know?
I don't. Who are you going to say?
Adrian Hauser, the guy they might look to acquire now, who just shoved it up their backside last night. Yeah, they had Adrian Hauser. Do they not recognize good pitching until he nearly no hits them? I mean, what? Jed Hoyer gets paid to be right. We're talking about all-stars, near all-stars. We're talking about guys that are hot commodities at a trading deadline. When Jed Hoyer needs pitching, he's got to get creative. No, you don't. You just have to have good judgment. Then maybe you don't have to spend all that money on Ryan Presley. Maybe you spend it on, maybe there's yet another top-notch starter you get. Maybe your bullpen's okay with all the relievers, the all-star relievers you've got spread around. You might, this week they're going to go to Milwaukee. Rob Zastrzyzny's going to be there, and Trevor McGill closing games, and hey, didn't they used to be ours? Yeah, they used to be yours. And they're the team ahead of you. I mean, they may not continue it. You see this with a lot of teams. The Brewers came from so far back, seemingly, and did it in such a hurry. So maybe they weren't that far back, but they did it in such a hurry. You've seen teams that put all of this into getting to the top. They passed the Brewers passed the Cubs. Look at the way they won. Look at those winning streaks. Look at everything they had to do. And then they exhale, and then the Cubs have a chance to pass them because the Cubs haven't really been much good lately. Remember early in the year? We were talking about this early. Sean and I were, right? It was the bottom of the lineup.
Yeah.
Right? And bottom of the lineup became the heart of the order when PCA got moved up. Carson Kelly wasn't all that anymore. But we got to the, remember, it was such a contagious thing. Reese McGuire showed up 20 minutes early, and he hit two home runs.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that bottom half of that lineup was really driving things from for a second. And you saw, too, like, I mean, like, Miguel Amaya is hurt now, Carson Kelly tailing off here a little bit. But that was how they turned things around a little bit last year, too, with the bottom half of that lineup. Guys like Amaya and whatever were hitting at the bottom portion of that lineup. But, like, Dansby Swanson's struggling. Now you've got PCA in the 4 or 5 hole. They just aren't getting any production out of that back end of that lineup.
We've gone a week between Kyle Tucker home runs, haven't we?
We have. You played the last that. One. Yeah,
yeah, you did. It's now growing hair.
Yeah, I mean, that's a guy that's supposedly going to get $600 million, right? So
not from the Cubs.
Maybe $400?
I don't know how much that affects the trade deadline, but your trade deadline is a lot different. Maybe you don't need to get creative, Jed, if you had been more accurate in your judgment, if you had your choices for developing these pitchers. Look at the other teams are doing. Look at San Diego's doing with Cubs pitchers. Look what Milwaukee's doing. You're going to have a chance to see what Milwaukee's doing. And you had Adrian Hauser, and he shows up at the White Sox. Do they have a pitch lap? Do the White Sox have a pitch lap?
Something like that.
I don't know. Brian Bannister is a one-man pitch lap, right? And Brian Bannister and the White Sox.
Bannister, right. He's a really smart guy. He's obviously outlining a lot of what the White Sox are doing now, but I don't know if you can call what they're doing a pitch lab. But it's like, you know, like the Cubs, I felt like got a lot of confidence back in like, was it like 2021, 22, when they had like Ryan Tepera and Andrew Chafin were appearing. Like Tepera accidentally gets an MVP vote. Like their bullpen kind of appeared out of nothing. And it felt like they could do that every year is the way they've thought. And I think you're looking now like bullpens are just volatile. You just got to keep adding to them. And the way you do that is you find good guys and you keep, you know, developing them. They don't just give up.
847 texture talks about the peripherals, and you're right. Hauser could regress to the mean. There's regressions a part of everybody. And 608 texture makes a point. Kyle Tucker got hurt his knee. He was in there. And you play through that. Do things. You're a team that relied on power. The Brewers are the team that relies on three. You need three hits to get a run, but with their pitching and their defense, that could stand up. Sorry. You can use injuries if you want, and regression to the mean, that waits to be seen. Maybe the Brewers are a team that will regress to the mean. Because it seemed like they made sure everything went right, huh?
I mean, they've won so many games in a row. But even, like, their version of Cade Horton, like, Jacob Mizorowski, is better than Cade Horton. You know, and this kid wasn't anyone they were talking about. But Cade Horton's been the, you know, the prospect of the future, the best guy the Cubs have had come through their system since Mark Pryor or Kerry Wood. And this Jacob Mizorowski guy's an all-star in seven games.
Yeah, right.
Just kind of how those things work sometimes.
The surprise is that he's not a former Cub.
Yeah.
The way this discussion
that really
would have
checked all the boxes then.
All right. They'll eventually play the Brewers. You know what? When they're done with the Brewers, comes something special here on the Score. The Score is once again teaming up with the Cubs and Stand Up to Cancer for the 24-hour Cubs for a Cure Radiothon. It all starts at 10 a.m. this Thursday right here on 670 The Score. Danny Parkins will host the Radiothon, which will feature inspiring stories and many donation incentives. 100% of the proceeds will benefit Brain Up for Cancer Research. That's this Thursday. All right, I'm going to take a break. When I come back, so much to do. Play Ben Johnson, but In the spirit of Saturday suckage, the Bears are making Caleb suck. Ben Johnson, we'll bring back what he said this morning, and it's kind of by suckage by design. Now, in my case, I sucked on accident, but it's what I do. I'm staying on brand. So I got to talk about, I did this long piece on MASH, and I sucked in part of that. And then I talked about the Blue Jays, and I sucked in part of that. So we'll correct all the mistakes, and then you will mercifully be done with me. Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I think right now is different from when we were here at OTAs for me. You know, the information and things like that, you know, is being retained or being talked about in the film room is a little bit different than it was in OTAs. And then obviously through the years, there's so many more layers that I haven't been over yet, that we haven't been over yet, just because it's our first year. And, you know, there's so much more within this offense to be able to unlock it. And obviously we're getting to the point where, like you said, we're self-correcting, doing all these things. And so at some point, you know, before the season, I think we'll keep progressing, obviously. And, you know, hopefully there's a next step. And then, you know, if not, you know, it's going to be the next year and, you know, things like that and game plans and things like that.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
Caleb Williams, your starting quarterback for now, your Chicago Bears on Sirius XM. Welcome back, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. So we've seen progress. He and the first unit didn't get thrown off the field by the coach, right? That was the first day. You're out. Ben Johnson didn't like the fact they couldn't even get out of a huddle and line up correctly. You're out. Get out. We don't want you here. Here comes Tyson Bagent, and he's clean. He's clean in his practice, and that's it. He doesn't get thrown out the way Caleb Williams did. So many of you out there, fellow Suckageers, regular Saturday Suckage listeners, but we're listening on a Friday, let me have a show of hands here, right? That you said immediately, this is just what Rosie's cigar guy predicted. On the 4th of July with Espo, I regaled you with what my cigar guy, Kevin, from the old Chicago smoke shop in Highland Park. I'd gone in there and he said, here, I got a prediction for you. And he's a ferocious sports fan. He grits his teeth and he says things like this. And he's very fierce. So fierce that AK has made him a Bucks fan. Because AK has so screwed up the Bulls. But he said, Tyson Bagent's going to be the starter by week five.
Week five.
Because Caleb can't play behind center, doesn't have the feet to do it, can't get rid of the ball. And so I said, oh, all right, well, I guess we have content for the show. I brought it to Espo, and we looked up week five. That's a bye week. That is a perfect week to do. So Kevin, my cigar guy from Old Chicago Smoke Shop, is calling for that. And there on the first day of practice, Caleb Williams is throwing picks on his first pass and can't get his team lined up and then sit down. Today we had progress. Today was progress. Caleb Williams did not get thrown out of the first unit to get thrown out of practice. Now, they ran a two-minute drill that ended in a touchdown. That's the object of the exercise. Of course, it started with a delay of game penalty, but not everything's going to be perfect in less than a week of doing what they want to do. And Caleb Williams has pretty much been bad. He has sucked in training camp. Ben Johnson met the media today, as he does most mornings, training camp. And if you listen to him, we'll play this cut. Caleb Williams sucks by design, at least right now.
As you work with Caleb, a lot of what you're describing over the last 6 months or so since you've been here is literally from the ground up with his footwork. How much or what is reasonable to expect to have carried over from last year? As you try to teach him, what does he already have from playing a full season?
There really isn't a ton of carryover from what he was asked to do, the play calls or anything of that nature. I mean, he's always been very comfortable as a shotgun quarterback going back to college and even last year. He's very comfortable in a two-minute setting. He's very comfortable with tempo-type plays. And so now we're asking him to be a little bit more structured in terms of the play calls. Sometimes there's multiple calls. You know, there's shifts, there's motions. There's a lot more going on mentally than probably there's ever been for him. And so at some point, this thing will start slowing down, and he's going to be able to catch up, and his physical ability will take over from there. But right now, because mentally it is what it is, he's playing a little bit slower than what he's capable of.
That's Ben Johnson talking about the early care and feeding, the pressure that they put on Caleb Williams. They're shoving everything down his throat, throwing everything at him, including unblocked rushers and a snarky little texter wisely noted. It's the only way Montez Sweat can get to the quarterback is if he's unblocked. And true or not, he did. And they want to see what Caleb Williams can handle. So none of what he's comfortable with. So he sucks by design. The idea is Ben Johnson is going to design a scheme based around what Caleb Williams does well, which was on display. That's why he got drafted overall, first overall, right? So they're throwing all the bad stuff at him and see how he reacts, and he's thinking instead of reacting. Don't know when it comes, when the point of how dire it gets that Ben Johnson decides, oh, this is just isn't working. But I guess we'll know when he gets rid of the ball quick, when he reacts and just, we know what he can do eluding tackles. We know what he can do in chaos. I mean, he ran some two-minute drills last year that would legendary stuff if he hadn't had idiot coaching. And there's every reason to think, but it was all that. And his set offense, a controlled offense, playing under center. That's not him. It was Jared Goff. That's one of the reasons my guy Kevin from the old Chicago smoke shop in Highland Park said, Jared Goff can't do what Caleb Williams can do, but Ben Johnson did a lot with Jared Goff, playing under center and doing all that stuff.
I was there.
Wow, Les. It really does sound like a voice from the next world. So a couple, we call this staying on brand. As we talked about Caleb Williams sucking by design, I suck because that's what I do. So I was talking about the movie MASH, and I talked about Burt Reynolds turned down the role of Trapper John, played by the coolest man ever, Elliot Gould, played Trapper John in the movie. And I also said Burt Reynolds also turned down the role of Garrett Breedlove, which helped make Donald Sutherland a star. And I didn't realize until the texter pointed out, no, idiot, Jack Nicholson played Garrett Breedlove in Terms of Endearment. And I said the name of the movie, and yet I thought it was Ordinary People, which Donald Sutherland was in, which was, okay, screw that up.
My bad, I should have caught it.
No, you don't, you have no idea what happened before. You didn't know what MASH was all about. You didn't know that the coolest man of my youth wore a muumuu in the movie of your youth in Ocean's 11. There's Elliot Gould in a muumuu. And the other thing is, and I knew the difference. 93, so we talked about the Blue Jays. 92, they won the World Series. That's the last time they were had the best record in baseball, which they have now. And in 92, they did that. And I said, 93, they won the World Series. White Sox fans. And there was all of Michael Jordan's. I must have said comeback when I should have said retirement. Whatever. Michael Jordan, I don't know what I said. I suck so you don't have to. But Michael Jordan hijacked that playoff series, certainly game one. And that's what I should have said. Now I'm going to say goodbye, and all of you people should be grateful. Giving you exactly what you want. I'm leaving the airwaves. And my otter looked it up. We're talking with Grody about a strain of pot called Saturday Suckage. The closest she found was Suckaz, S-U-C-K-A-Z. So there's still room for it. She is really good, my otter. So we'll see if by the time we come back, WB Club can have a Saturday Suckage strain. It would be sativa. We would put the wake in Wake and Bake dispensaries around Chicago. Steve Rosenblum, thanks for listening. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman. Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Bears training camp is ongoing at Hallis Hall with new leadership under Ben Johnson. The level of expectation has reached a new level.
Our guys, we got to end up executing, getting in and out of the huddle a certain way. And there's some things we just don't have any tolerance for anymore. We got too far to go.
If Jalen Johnson misses a month,
this is the kind of thing that can linger over the course of a year.
Why is there this ambiguity surrounding the injury to one of your best players?
I think Caleb Williams is the most divisive Bears quarterback in history.
Keep listening as the Score team covers every storyline. As the Bears gear up for their 2025 season. Bears training camp coverage on The Score is presented by Chevy Drives Chicago and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
This segment is brought to you by Pottawatomie Casino Hotel, Milwaukee's top gaming destination.
Wednesday, July 30th, the Milwaukee Brewers take on Chicago at home, and Pottawatomie will get you there. Pottawatomie Sportsbook opens at 10 a.m. on game day, and with any same-day sports bet or sportsbook dining purchase, you'll get a wristband and shuttle to the stadium. Visit the website for more. Bet above the rest.
Hey, Chicago sports fans. Chicago Sports Network is now available on Comcast Xfinity Channel 200. Catch over 300 live Bulls, Blackhawks, and White Sox games each year. Visit chsn.com for more details. Chicago Sports Network, where Chicago comes first.
Careers packed with potential. Uline is looking to add MVPs to their warehouse team at their August hiring event in Kenosha. Warehouse workers earn pay starting from $25 an hour with significant earning potential. Plus, full health coverage, 401k match from day one on the job. With over 45 years in business, Uline offers stability and success you can count on. Sign up for your interview on Tuesday, August 5th, in Kenosha at uline.jobs. That's uline.jobs.
Everything comes down to how you finish, and the wall covering, drywall finishing, signage, glass systems, and painting contractors at finishingchicago.com always produce a hit. Chicago's top general contractors and property managers rely on Finishing Chicago's industrial and commercial contractors to provide the most well-trained, safety-focused, and reliable crews. Before starting work on your next job site, check out their website, finishingchicago.com, your free resource to find quality finishing contractors.
Proud partner of Cubs Radio.
Change is always happening. It's part of life. And when it comes to music, change is all around us. Songs are rewritten, classics are remixed, bands and artists come and go. Even our taste in music changes. Here at Xfinity, we know there's still good in keeping some things the same. That's why we want to do our part with a 5-year price guarantee on our internet. It means no matter what changes, you get 5 years of the most reliable Wi-Fi with our best equipment included for a price that stays exactly the same. Surprised? Life is full of them. One internet price, 5 years, guaranteed. Learn more at xfinity.com/deals. Restrictions apply. New residential customers only. Taxes and fees extra and subject to change. Most reliable Wi-Fi based on OpenSignal Awards USA. Fixed broadband experience report August 2024.
The IRS finally caught up with Louie.
I hadn't paid my taxes in 8 years. I owed the IRS a lot of money.
Louie was in deep trouble.
We're going to take your house, put a lien on your bank account, garnish your pay. They don't care. They're going to take your paycheck.
Louie found out about Optima Tax Relief, the leading tax resolution firm. A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau, they've resolved over $1 billion for their clients.
Optima Tax, they help me. They calm me down. They made me feel comfortable, and I trust them.
Louie has a lot to be thankful for.
I don't owe the IRS anymore, and I'm able to live a comfortable life, a lot better life. It was because of Optima Tax.
For tax help you can trust, call Optima now for a free consultation. Take it from Louie.
If you owe the IRS, don't go it alone. Give Optima Tax a call. They can help you.
Call 800-756-6399. 800-756-6399. 800-756-6399.
Optima Tax Relief.
Testimonial from an actual client. Some restrictions.